good chance that those 500 files that you selected are representative of the 5,000 total because you have selected them in a random way. That's what the randomization gives you, is it will give you a representative type of sample.
So usually in comprehensive exam, the probability design would work?
Probably. Maybe not always, but if not, you'll know very clearly that it won't, because I'll use certain words like, this is an exploratory study. And I'll say, this is an exploratory study, mm-hmm. or this is the first time that this agency has asked this question. Mm-hmm. That would probably clue you into maybe not probability. Because in very exploratory, very early stages of research, you may not want to put all the effort and the money into being probability. Mm-hmm. You may want to use more of a non-probability design. So, for example, you know, convenient sampling. That's a non-probability type of sampling design. So if I want to know what MPPA students think about research methods as a core class, I'll never ask that because I don't want to know the answer, but I want to know what MPPA students think about research methods as a core. If I'm teaching a research methods class one night and I have 20 people in the room, I'll ask those 20 people what they think about research methods as a course. They're convenient to me. They're in front of me on a Monday or Tuesday night. That's why I select them. That's a non-probability type of design. It's convenient sampling. I don't know that those 20 students who are sitting in front of me that evening are representative of all the students in the program. They may be. They may not be. I have no idea. I have no clue whether or not they are. So I can't really say that they represent the entire MPPA student body. That's not probability. That's not random. I'm not selecting them randomly. I'm selecting them because they're sitting in front of me on Monday night. Another example of a non-probability type of design is what we call purposive or judgmental sampling. Purposive or judgmental sampling is when the researcher himself or herself feels that he or she knows who belongs in the sample. He or she knows who best represents the population. So I would say, well, you know, I know the students in the MPPA program pretty well, so I'm going to go and find 20 MPPA students who I think pretty much represent the entire MPPA student body, and I'm going to go and ask them my questions. That's purposive judgmental sampling. I'm using my judgment as a researcher to say, these people represent the population I'm interested in. Again, it's not randomly done. It's me using my own judgment, my own intuition, to decide who to include and who not to include. That's the reason why it's called judgmental sampling. So there are lots of non-probability types of designs that do not use random selection. If you're in the very early stages of research, and this is the first time you've really looked at this issue before, you might want to be non-probability. Save yourself time, save yourself some money. You're not trying to generalize your results to a larger population. You're just getting started with your research. So if the scenario you get on a comprehensive exam says that this is the first time we look at it, it's very exploratory in nature, that would signal to you non-probability. If it's anything that you may want to generalize your results like here, it's clear that we have fewer people who are using the program than the total of the entire population, kind of clues you in that you're probably going to want to generalize your results. If you're going to want to generalize your results, it's going to be probability as your type of sampling design. And it's very important to read the scenario and look for those key phrases and those key words in the scenario. Because all the scenarios will be written to kind of guide you in certain directions. That doesn't mean there's only one way to answer them. There are lots of ways to answer the questions, but I will kind of be pushing you in certain directions with the way in which I write the scenarios. And that being said, you know, when I'm grading your answers and you're talking about sampling design, you know, if you tell me probability or you tell me non-probability, that'll probably be good enough to pass that part of the question. I won't necessarily expect you to get into systematic sampling or something like that. As long as you do probability or non-probability and why, that's going to be good enough for me. You may, on some of these, in the past we have asked you for a size of the sample. So what sampling design would you use, probability or non-probability, and how large of a sample would you want to use? If we ask you how large of a sample, we're not looking for you to calculate anything. So it's just, it's an estimate. And so, you know, like here with 5,000 children, if you say 500 or so, approximately 500, that's fine. You know, even if you said approximately 200, that'd be okay as well. So just, if you have 5,000 in your population and you say 5 that you're going to sample, that would be a problem. Because obviously 5 can't represent 5,000. So just a reasonable estimate of how many you're sampling. What I'm much more interested in is it not probability or is it non-probability and why? And then the final part of most of these questions looks at the data that you will be collecting. Sometimes the questions look at how will you collect your data? Where will you get your information from? How will you collect your information? Sometimes it looks at how will you analyze the information you get? And sometimes it looks at both. So I would say the safe thing to do is be prepared to talk about both how you would collect your data and how you would analyze your data. So here I'm just asking for analysis. But I think to be safe, both collection as well as analysis. So data collection. And yeah, I know you talked about this before in research methods. A lot of ways to collect your data. A lot of it depends upon the type of data you're collecting and where that data is coming from. So you could say, I'm going to collect my information, my data from face-to-face interviews. That could be one way, interview people. Surveys could be another one. Focus groups could be another one. This is the part that is really flexible. There's a lot of latitude built in here. So, for instance, for this scenario, I could see you saying interviews. You know, you might want to interview these children if you can to get some in-depth answers in terms of, you know, why their BMI has gone up or gone down or healthy eating habits or whatever. I could see you surveying them. You know, you might, when they come in to attend the program, before they leave that day, here's a survey. Could you fill out the survey for us? I could certainly see you surveying. I could also see you using a focus group. You know, maybe putting together groups of 10 children at a time to sit them down in a room and ask them about their eating habits and, you know, why, you know, their BMI has gone down and whatever. I could really see you doing a lot of different methods of data collection. So there really isn't a right or wrong answer for this one for data collection. It's whatever you think is most appropriate. With data analysis, what we are looking for is, can you select the most appropriate analytical tool based upon the information you need to answer your research question? Remember, all the things you are doing here, whether it be defining your variables or your research design or your sampling design or data collection or data analysis, all these things are all done for one primary purpose, to answer your research question. That's your goal here. So with this, your goal is to see if this program has been effective at reducing childhood obesity levels. Well, what type of information would you need to answer that question? You know, would you need quantitative information like the BMI, you know, the body mass index? That would be very quantitative type of information. If you had that type of quantitative information, you might want to use regression analysis. To see what variables contribute to increases or decreases in body mass index. So that might be your analytical tool that you'll want to use. A lot of the decision on your analytical tools will depend upon, is it quantitative or qualitative information? Is it numbers-based information or non-numeric information? BMI is obviously numbers-based. If you are instead looking at effectiveness in terms of, you know, how satisfied people are with the program, then that's going to be more qualitative. And so you would, that's a different type of data that you're collecting. So if it's qualitative data, you might want to do kind of a content analysis. That's your analytical tool.
I have a question for the data collection. Can we use like two ways?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's very common. So yeah, you can certainly, you could say, I want to do surveys with some follow-up interviews.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that's very strong.
So the data will be quantitative and qualitative.
Yep. It would be both. And that's a really good, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because the best way to collect your information is what's called mixed methodology. And that's exactly what mixed methodology is. It's some of your information is quantitative and some is qualitative. That's really the dominant approach, or modality, if you call it. The dominant approach in research is mixed methodology, both quantitative as well as qualitative. So not only are you allowed to say that, but I would recommend that if possible, say you're going to collect your data both quantitatively as well as qualitatively. So thanks, that's a really important point. Honestly, of all the things that you are doing here, the one that I probably place the least emphasis on is the data analysis. Just because I know in our research methods classes, you don't go into a lab, at least you don't anymore. You don't do SPSS or anything like that. It's much more from a conceptual point of view. Our research methods classes really now are much more research design than they are statistics courses. And so I really kind of de-emphasize the data analysis. So if you can do a good job on research question, your variables, your research design, your sampling design, do a good job in all those areas. If you have issues on the data analysis, you're still going to pass the question. I had a couple of those instances recently, and both the people passed the question even though they struggled on the data analysis, because I really think the first four are much more important. But again, for this scenario, that's just, you know, examples of some ways in which, I know, now we're 20 minutes later, but those are just some ways that you could have approach the scenario. And again, there are lots of different ways in which you can do it. As long as the approaches that you select make sense and you're able to tell me why, you know, so if you say I'm going to use an experimental design and this is why I can use an experimental design, then you're going to be absolutely fine. But I thought, you know, going through this in detail is a good idea, just because, like I told you, when people tend to have problems, it tends to be on the research methods question. So I thought we could avoid those issues if possible.
I'm sorry, you talk about the external validity. What is it?
The external validity is generalizing your results. So taking the results you get from these 500 people in your sample and generalizing those results to all 5,000. So if you're going to say, for these 500 participants, the program, participation in the program reduced their obesity levels, could we say, well, that's probably going to be true for everyone who's participating in the program. Mm-hmm. That's external validity. If the results we get from our sample can be generalized to the population as a whole and are the same for the population as a whole, we have external validity. Okay. And there, I should probably mention, there, in addition to external validity, there's also this thing called internal validity as well. So there are really two different types of validity. External validity, as we said, is your ability to generalize your results. Internal validity asks the question, are you measuring what you say you are measuring? So if you are saying my research design that I'm putting together here will measure the effectiveness of the program in reducing childhood obesity, is it capable of measuring the effectiveness? This is where those control variables become very important. If you don't have the right control variables in your design, then you're not going to be able to isolate that relationship. So internal validity is, are you isolating the relationship between your independent and your dependent variable? You can only isolate that relationship and have that type of internal validity if you use the right control variables. So if we just said, okay, we're going to, you know, put together this research design for this obesity program, And we're only going to use one independent variable, participation in the program, and the dependent variable, childhood obesity. And those are the only two variables we're going to use. You don't have internal validity, because there could be a lot of other things that are causing obesity rates to change other than participation in the obesity program. So, is your design capable of answering your research question? That's another way of putting it. Can it answer your research question? Is your design capable of truly measuring the effectiveness of the program? If it's truly able to measure the effectiveness of the program, then you have internal validity. If not, then you don't have internal validity. So that's just the other type. So internal validity, can your research question answer your research design, answer your research question? External validity, can you generalize your results beyond just the sample that you are using? So we really didn't talk a lot about reliability. But I think that's probably okay, because I don't think you'll really have to talk much about reliability in your answer. But if you want to talk about reliability, we can do that too. Any other questions on what we have covered and how to approach a scenario like this? Because like I said, next month on the exam, you'll get two of these. They'll look very similar. It'll just be the scenario will be a little bit different, but what you'll be asked to do will be the same between the two.
I'm concerned a little bit about the sampling. There is a lot of different kind of sample. When we are studying, like, do we need to focus on all of these samples or only the samples that we are talked about in class?
If you could just differentiate between probability and non-probability, that would be good enough to pass the question.
Okay.
Yeah, and the reason why I do that is just because I know people have different instructors for research methods, and over the past 5 years in the program, there have probably been about 6 or 7 different people who taught research methods who all teach it a little bit differently. And so I don't want to get into a lot of the details that you may not have talked about, you know, in your class and someone else talked about in their class. So I think if you can just do probability versus non-probability, that's good enough. But yeah, there are a lot of different sampling designs. Now we could go through about a dozen or so different sampling designs, but you can just know the difference between probability and non-probability. That will certainly be good enough for the question. That would make me happy. Or as happy as I get. Do you think would it be beneficial for you to have another one of these types of practice scenarios on research?
Yes.
Okay. I can put one together, and you know, nothing graded or anything, but I can put something together and send it out to you if you want to just practice with it.
Okay.
Yeah, good. I would be happy to do that. Okay. Well, I have your policy practice question, which really isn't much of a question, but this is one that, who'd you have for policy? Do you have Professor Honorico?
No.
Dr. Linda. Okay. So you had?
Smith.
Smith, okay. This is a question I think, did you talk to Strategic Triangle? And
yes.
You did all that? Okay. Did you do that in yours? I don't know if you did it in yours or not. Mark
Warren.
Well, this is a question that Professor Amerigo and Professor Smith like for me to put on the exam, which if you have those classes, you've seen this before, I'm sure, and this is probably not going to be much of a challenge for you. The Strategic Triangle of Mark Moore. If you haven't had that, didn't have that in your class, let me know. Because I've got the Creating Public Value manuscript from Mark Moore in electronic form that I can email to you. In fact, I'll make sure I'll go ahead and do that. So you can take a look at it. But enumerate the elements of the strategic triangle as described by Mark H. Moore. This is, again, Professor Arrigo and Professor Smith like to have this on the comprehensive exam. So one thing I would point out to you with this one is the word enumerate. A couple of people in the past ran into problems literally interpreting the word enumerate. I wish they didn't use this word. Enumerate usually means just list. You want to do a little bit more than that. You know, so if you could talk about, you know, so we've got your authorize the environment, you have your operational capabilities, you have public value, the three parts of the strategic triangle. Discuss those. You know, what they are and how they work together and how they interact. So it's more than just enumerate. I guess instead of enumerate, I prefer to use the word discuss. So discuss the elements of the strategic triangle as described by Mark H. Moore in his Creating Public Value. And we'll do the same thing we've always done. So you have until Sunday, you work on that, submit it. The link is already up there on the Blackboard site. And I'll then review it in my class next Monday. And we'll go over it. We'll talk more about policy next Monday. And then I will give you your last practice question on ethics. And then the following week on the 27th, we will do the do ethics. I think that says 27th, right? Yeah. We'll do ethics, and then our last two meetings on the 3rd and the 10th will just be individual consultations. Mm-hmm. So any issues you have with any of the material, we can certainly sit down and talk. And I would think probably, I'm sure by the 10th, I'll actually have the